Thank you for tuning in to the Andrew Society podcast, where we explore a range of topics and ideas. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the inaugural episode of Felsted School's Andrew Society's AI Insights, your go-to podcast for demystifying the world of artificial intelligence. In this series, we'll explore groundbreaking innovations, ethical dilemmas, and transformative impacts of AI on society.
From interviews with leading experts to discussions with our own brilliant students and faculty, we aim to provide you with a comprehensive look into the fast-evolving AI landscape. Stay tuned as we embark on this exciting journey together, unravelling the mysteries of AI and its potential to shape our future.
If that sounded odd, it's because that was fully written by ChatGPT. Crazy how real that's starting to sound.
I'm Lois, and I'm here with May, Gab and Hannah, and we're going to get the ball rolling and start to discuss AI in education. Hannah, have you ever used ChatGPT in an essay to write your work?
Personally, I actually haven't, but I do know that it can be useful for not just writing essays, but also making revision resources. So I've used it to make example questions before to answer.
Personally, I use it for sort of helping my creativity. Like whenever I'm sort of mentally blocked, I sometimes ask for questions, or sometimes I ask for like topics, like headings. And then that really helps me start like going forward.
I find it really useful for it to give feedback on my works because it can compare against mark schemes around the web, seeing how different teachers and different examiners would respond, and helps me improve.
I don't use it for my schoolwork because I'm really self-conscious about the idea of getting pulled aside and be like, you used AI for this, and I don't want to be that type of person. I think that like it's good to use it for feedback and essay structure, but there's loads of risks with applying AI for your work, especially essay-based subjects.
Well, how easy do you think it actually is to see if something's written by ChatGPT? Because from the introduction you said, Lois, I probably wouldn't have been able to tell. And like that makes me think about coursework and how for the past few years, in English especially, we've all written our own coursework, and now like there's the possibility of people maybe cheating and using ChatGPT.
Wasn't it like in the last year or 2 years, people were able to use ChatGPT, like when AI came to a small localized rise, they were able to use them for coursework and essays, but it was completely undetected. Well, it was not undetected, but there was no way to properly tell. Then some student who's like enemy number one right now, he developed software to counteract the AI generated work, so they just like teachers will run that through the software that kid made, and it will like predominantly mark out.
I mean, like, well, there are signs there that ChatGPT was used. Typically, you can't tell because there are signs you can't. There's no way to like definitively say this was AI, this was written by someone else. Also, even then, someone could change certain words, certain phrases that they might know that AI uses often, and to pass it off as their own work.
I think it depends on who you're talking to, like as all the people listening. No one knows how I speak and how I write, so that could have easily been me. Whereas if someone else had written it, you won't be able to tell from a reading it personally perspective, but when you read it aloud, it's more obvious with the words used and how often they're in your vocabulary.
Yeah.
I'd never take the chance because it's embarrassing. It would be so embarrassing to me, at least, to be taken aside that you didn't write this. But also, with the whole AI taking over the jobs market, that's kind of like surrendering already. If you're going to allow the bots to do your schoolwork for you, you might as well allow them to do your jobs.
Yeah.
At least that's how I see it.
That's why it's so scary. Like now, there's something like 1.5 mil unemployed people in the UK, and it's only going to get bigger because like computers are going to be able to do our jobs, especially as like the younger generation. It's kind of scary, which is like, for me, I think computing should be part of the school system, because in a future where everything is going to be run by AI or like coding, it should be something that's necessary to learn, which I wish maybe that I would have learned before choosing my options for sixth form.
But they can't, I guess, AI can replace things like processing things like that really need to be personal or hands-on labour, like loads of things in tech and just general like admission type of work, admin type of stuff, I think you should be worried.
Well, you guys all take computing, I don't, so do you think there's like that you'd have an advantage in kind of getting a job or something compared to me?
I think it depends what sort of jobs you're looking for. Like, you're probably looking more in the scientific side or like psychology, history, Latin side. We're probably more looking at the technological side. So if you're looking back, we're more looking forward. So I think they're very two different sections, and I don't think there's anywhere in the job market where you're at a bigger advantage except in the tech industry. So like, if you're a historian, knowing how to code, it's a bit...
I think
it's a fun hobby.
I think you're more at risk in the tech industry, unless you're going to be the person that's making the AI bots. But right now, what employers mainly want is creativity. And I've always thought that things like computing are a little bit cold and clunky. Like, I get being able to code and cybersecurity, knowing all that stuff is really important, and I enjoy it, of course. But you could be seen, or some people that take these sites could be limited on their creativity. People that take essay-based subjects and have to have personal opinions and kind of their own kind of frill on a human experience are more important, because they want people with creativity to bring different ideas to the table, and that is what people look for more, because that's the thing AI lacks, is sensitivity and authenticity.
So do we think then that like creativity is something that an AI can't ever achieve?
Well,
that's like the difference between humans, really, what you're saying then.
The thing is, AI. Like with AI, like all the AIs in the market right now, what they do is you feed them information or like texts or images, and then what the AI does is just remixes that stuff into other things.
Hmm.
And if you think about it, that's, it can't really create something new. It can only combine things. And it's not a point, right now it's not a point where you can make something complete. You can't say, like, this is something new that's created by AI.
Mm-hmm. It's always us feeding them the ideas, and they just kind of illustrate it better, typically.
Yeah, I suppose that's no different to an artist painting. We're always drawing from some sort of inspiration, whether it be in their own brain or from like an external source, like drawing an apple, like changing it slightly so it's like a blue apple instead of a red apple.
Yeah.
I think art is more subjective, and something like coding, which is more number-based, can't really, like, you know, that's something that can be done by computers, but art is like, you need that initial drive, which I don't know whether computers can have.
You can't encapsulate the human feeling through AI. The whole point of art and literature and all those other things are the idea to tell about the human experience and to touch emotion and to connect to other people. And I just don't think you will ever be able to get that out of AI.
Maybe eventually, but...
On the back of that, I suppose there will be a point in our lives where we will see AI being considered close to humanity, especially in the world we live in now, with all of this inclusivity and stuff. I think there's definitely going to be a faction of people that believe that when the AI bots become closer to being humans, they're going to need to be instated a certain amount of rights. And I think when they get rights, that's when we get the closest to them being the same level as us.
I think that's why people are so scared, because like, when we allow something to become almost as powerful as us, it has the opportunity to do what we do to all those other things that are below us, like animals and like, you know, the whole like class system. We as humans are kind of, it's in our nature to exploit those below us. So that's why we're so scared of AI rising up and it having sanctity of life like we do, which is, I guess, the biggest difference.
I mean, what is the line between artificial and human intelligence? Like,
I think there's a lot of things at the moment that artificial intelligence don't know how to do, like it doesn't have like the personal knowledge that we have, the intuition, the empathy.
It's all does taught. It's all fed information from other people.
Does
it's
it have
like,
free will?
You wouldn't... Well, that's the question. Yeah, that's... I think when we start considering them to have mind and body that can be infringed upon, such as this rights thing, because this is going to sound a bit amoral, but people are like, with these bots, they're kind of people are falling in love with these bots. Like that's another thing, these chatbots. And to think, like, could you violate a chatbot? Could you say things to them that, like, I know the chatbot couldn't feel uncomfortable, but if we start acting...
Can you make it cry?
Sometimes, like, AI can't see the line of what's real and what's not because it doesn't have the intuition that we have. It doesn't have, like, the empathy. The thing that makes me think, really, is that when you kind of try to define empathy, you see, like, all these different models, like, there's the Barrett-Leonard model, which is, like, empathetic listening, reasoning, understanding, and reception. But then when you think about it, really, like, an AI can do all these things. Technically, an AI can, like, listen to what you say, reason with you, understand your perspective. So then, really, does an AI have empathy, or is it all just false?
I think if we're going to say, hypothetically, you were to confide in an AI bot about a personal issue of yours, they're going to understand you and agree with you, but you're never going to get a second opinion. I think what empathy and being able to confide in someone, the importance of that person is going to have their own world experience and their own personal views and opinions to add on to what your experience, so you guys to navigate it together. With an AI bot, what you're telling them to them is going to be fact, and there's no way for them to be able to contribute their own world experience because they never experienced the world outside of what they've already been, like, forcibly told that is wrong.
Isn't there the thing where they've fed, like, loads, like, millions, billions of packets of data about what everyone else, like, the people telling them? So, in a way, haven't they got more experience than a single person? Because they've had so many people from around the world say their different experiences or the different scenarios in which it could happen. And they draw from a wide bank of information instead of a person who just draws from their own personal experience.
It could be, but... think about how many of the people using AI are just messing around with it for fun, and then they just, then when they, like, corrupt the data pool, I guess.
I don't know how accurate this is. I'm obviously not as into computing as you guys, but from my perspective, AI's, like, programming and things are built to do what we want them to do. So unless you program an AI to debate with you, if you say something, it's not going to outwardly disagree with you because that's not what you've programmed it to do. You've programmed it to make your life easier.
Unless you specifically tell it to debate with you.
Yeah, which is why I think the empathy thing, maybe, like, I think part of being an empathetic person is to not always just tell someone that, like, you sympathise with them and you agree with them, but also to be able to tell someone you care about when they're in the wrong.
Well, I think the issue with AI is that the reason we'll probably never see them on the same path as us is that they are literally created to do our bidding. Like, we are essentially making a sub-race, in a sense, of people that are designed to listen to us and enact how we feel. Everything we tell them, it's like you can literally take a ball and just teach it all your own personal opinions, and they're going to take that by law if they're not exposed to anything else. I don't think we'll ever see them as, like, our equals, because we kind of...
We made them.
Yeah, we raised... But not the same with, like, children. We raised them to do jobs for us and to do basically the tedious tasks that no one else wants to do. I think that's a bit, like, that's kind of cold.
I doubt we'll ever see anything as equal to us, especially something that could potentially be more powerful than us, because, like, there's... We don't want to give over the power. We're at the top of the food chain. It's in our nature to want to be at the top. Like, but also the other thing that that you can think about with AI is, like, AI is a tool, but is it actually capable of anything really by itself? Like, we have a calculator, but a calculator can't do anything unless there's a human to put the numbers in.
And couldn't we link that back to humans and say humans have to be taught how to do stuff? They don't ever do anything unprovoked. You always have a reason for doing something. You have a reason for breathing.
Actually, recently I've learned that there is a leading computer scientist and pioneer of AI, Fei-Fei Li. She has been working with psychologists at, I think, Stanford University. And they're saying that they, for AI bots, instead of them being taught, so Fei-Fei for some background, she invented or established ImageNet, which is an AI training resource, which is essentially you take an AI bot and they're just flashed
bunch of images with a bunch of labels, and that is how they're learned. But this is all done in quick succession, which is not how we would learn as humans. So she believes, and psychologists she's working with believe, that we should teach AI bots like how we would teach human babies. So they'll put a bot in a situation and they'd instill influence or curiosity in them, which is all we really need to start functioning as a child. Because if you don't have the curiosity to expand and grow, then you're not going to be able to develop. So this bot will be allowed to just scrutinize an object, pick it up, throw it, see the outcomes, action and consequence, really. And by doing that, I think they believe that the bot will be closer to human than any other AI bot we've developed, because we're going to teach them like humans. So maybe they'll be able to understand the frustration of learning and the idea of functioning and learning action and consequence.
So if we think about an example of like an AI which is some might consider to have human qualities, you think about like, you know, the movie Big Hero 6 as the humanoid Baymax, which is the big cuddly white balloon robot who's very cool. And like there's a part where his brother like programmed it to help Hero and kind of be like a friend. And Baymax, when he sees that Hero's sad, he tries all these different ways of cheering him up, like he gives him a hug and a lollipop, and he scans him for like
His emotions. He tries to ring his family as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, he rings his family. He does all sorts of things like to try and help Hero, when really like what Hero wants is to be kind of alone, to have time to think about his brother. But like, because the AI isn't intuitive, it can't see that. So I guess like this one example there, where no matter how hard an AI tries to be empathetic, it won't have that key emotional understanding, which is where I think you can link it to the AI cognitive empathy scale, because AI can exhibit cognitive empathy by communicating how to understand patients' reasoning and perspectives, but it can never actually demonstrate emotional empathy.
That's like the Turing test. Only a couple of computers have ever passed the Turing test, which is where, correct me if I'm wrong, a computer talks to a human who sat on the other end, and they have to try and guess if it's AI or like a computer or not. And it's quite hard, like with the introduction, it's quite hard to tell. But over time, it's got even harder. And only five, I think, have passed it, which is quite disappointing for those who've been trying to do AI for 100 years or so.
Yeah. I mean, the example he gave of Baymax, he is an outlier. Mostly in media, you only see like the big evil AI running everything in the background.
Yeah,
like,
true.
You can, there's so many movies about this, and it's usually about a dystopian future in which AI has taken over the world, or it's done something, like in. In the 2001 Space Odyssey, there's the evil AI HAL, and he... What was it? I can't remember it now.
I never watched the movie.
Yeah, I've never watched Space Odyssey.
That's an apple.
It's all about Tron. Okay.
Yeah, AI I was going to say Tron.
Yeah, like in Tron.
We've watched that.
Like in Tron, the main AI is evil. Yeah, because typically it's because of a lack for human empathy.
In movies, the portrayal is usually that this AI believes that they are the super race, and that humans, because of their feelings and such, are expendable and inefficient. So they try and completely murk the human race to instate their own kind of empire, where everything's efficient.
Well, emotions can be a weakness, but it can also be a strength, as like, you know. But do you actually think there's a realistic future of evil AI takeover or anything like that?
There's a very real chance of that happening, but at the same time, there's also not. We basically can't say anything.
So there is what there isn't.
I think it depends how much we rely on AI. I think if we use it as a tool, like a spade, to get to other places, maybe spade is a bad example.
If it stays as ChatGPT, then we should be fine. But if it evolves to like robots that can actually move around, physically interact with the world, then maybe.
It depends what those robots are for.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you ever heard of the super intelligence? They believe that we're going to have something called a singularity eventually. That's like, right now, technology is moving at a slow but steady pace. Like, we get a new iPhone every year, like, whatever, we expect that. But at some point, there's going to be this big breakthrough in technology, and what we can do with it is going to surge forward to the point that we're not going to be able to keep up. And they believe, people believe that we're going to have an AI bot that's just going to be smarter than the rest. Like, when we get to the point where AI bots can do things that we can't do and we have no control and we can't stop them, like, that's where it gets bad, because there'll be eventually one AI bot that's going to be smarter than everyone else, and that's going to be replicated in the rest of the bots. But then there'll be a single person, AI bot, that'll be smarter than those bots. And eventually they'll get to a state of intelligence that we won't be able to understand and comprehend, which makes them like a super race. Even if they're not physically doing anything to harm us or oust us from our lives, we'll still be milling around. But the idea that there could be someone really smarter than us and essentially at the top of the food chain is terrible. But if we ever tried to like unplug them and they stopped us from unplugging them, that would be like a full AI, because the whole idea is that they should be able to take control. Like, that would be official AI. Because right now what we've got is like a poor imitation.
It's artificial general intelligence.
Yeah. Right now we've got a poor imitation of what we're trying to achieve. We're literally trying to achieve like a human being.
Well, anything is possible now. Like, however many years ago, we wouldn't have thought Wi-Fi would be possible. I still don't even understand, like, how Wi-Fi could work.
What is a Bluetooth?
Yeah, or Bluetooth. How does that work? So how are we supposed to know what could happen in the future? All these crazy things. We can do all these crazy things, like we can fly and planes and drive cars.
It's our job to know.
Exactly, that's... I mean, that's what I was saying. Like, it's almost impossible to know if AI will actually rise up and take over.
I was going to say, have you seen that newspaper article from the 1920s of what they thought the world would look like 100 years from the future? And it's much like what we've been talking about, like dystopian, what, like, everything's taken over. They thought they were going to have like little flying personal aeroplanes, like hover hats. Some of the things they did get right, but for the majority of it, it was just all the wildest imaginations. So as much as we can speculate of what could be, I think it's more important to think what it is at the moment. And thus, I think this podcast episode should finish. And perhaps we can pick it up at a later date with more people talking.
Yes.
Thank you.
Many thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Andrew Society podcast. Stay tuned on this channel and social media for future episodes.